Hello. Chapter 4, induction and the recursion. Induction is a proof method, very efficient proof method. To prove by induction that the statement Pn is true for all integers n, we have to do two things. We have to verify that the first statement is true, and then we have to go on with the conditional statement pk implies pk plus 1 for some integer k, that this is true also. That is true for all positive integers. As you see in the book, there is a ladder to illustrate this idea, and I have often thought about it as a staircase. Do you dare to climb in a staircase if you know that the first step is safe? And if step number k is safe, then also step k plus 1 is safe. And k is any positive integer. Yes, I do. Let's take an example of this immediately. I take it from the book 415. And there is a sum of the odd squares up to some 2n plus 1. So for n, pn goes in, then the sum goes up to 2n plus 1 squared. And the statement is that this is equal to a polynomial in n, the highest order, the order is 3. And that sounds reasonable. You can think of cubes of volume 1 unit, and then you at the top have 1 cube, and then you have 9 cubes, and below this you have 25 cubes. It's like a kind of discrete pyramid, and the height and the dimensions of this pyramid must be proportional to n. So take the volume, it must be something with a cube. But here we have the exact formula, they say. Oh, let's check it. Is p1 true? Yeah, left hand side. Then we have to square up to 2 times 1 plus 1, that's 3. 1 squared plus 3 squared is 10. What is the right-hand side telling us? Then we have to put in n equal to 1 there. Then we get 2 times 3 times 5, and we should divide by 3, that's 10. Okay, it works. So far, so good. We can check if you want 2 also. In the next, then we have 3 terms in our sum, and both right and left hand side will get be 35. Okay, now we come to a little bit more difficult part when we turn page to page 2. And have a look. Then we assume that pk is true for some k. That means that if I sum up 1 squared plus 3 squared plus 5 squared up to 2k plus 1 squared, then this is equal to k plus 1 times 2k plus 1 times 2k plus 3 divided by 3. Now I have to take a look at pk plus 1. So and then I take my sum first up to take 2k plus 1 squared, that's in brackets there, but now we should go one step further. So that you see the last time there, the term there is on the fourth line on page 2, it's 2k plus 1 plus 1 squared. And now comes the important thing. Do the so-called induction step. You are allowed to assume that pk is true. So let's replace this thing in the bracket, the first part there, in with this formula. We are allowed to do this. And what's left is one term extra, this when you put in k plus 1. If you multiply with 2, you get 2k plus 3 squared there. So that was induction step. What can you do more? What do you want? What do I hope for? I write there. Well, we hope that this formula works also for with k plus 1. Pk plus 1 should also be true. So I hope the last expression about there is equal to, and now I put in my formula there, I put in k plus 1 everywhere. After some manipulations there, I get k plus 2 times 2k plus 3 times 2k plus 5 divided by 3. If we can show this, we are not done yet, but we know where we want to go. We are like a sailor on the ocean. If we know where to go, on the which harbor to go, then it's more easy to steer the boat. And it's exactly the same situation here. We know what we want. We want to. We have a hope, a dream to prove that PK plus 1 is also true. So with this in mind, I start now, I go back to line 5 up there and start to manipulate with this expression, and I hope it's equal to my dream there. Okay, I have it on the middle on the page there. So let's check. I write, and the first thing is I pull out 2k plus 3 and a factor 3 in the denominator. In the square bracket, something is left, and that turns out to be on the last line there, 2k squared plus 9k plus 10. And now I cross my fingers and hope, is this equal to k plus 2 times 2k plus 5, as we hoped for? Yes, it is. We are done. We have completed an induction proof that this formula we had on previous page, it works for all integers. So first prove that P1 or the first starting the first integer there is that this is true. Then we go on with the induction step, and then we think, what do we want? Where are we heading? How this should be true for k plus 1 also. How is the formula looking like then? Okay, you have to practice on this, and I give another example. Now I turn page to page 3 and take another example from the book 4120. And then it's a little bit modified here. We shall prove that 3 to the power of n is smaller than n factorial when n is greater or equal to 7. This is an inequality this time. We said last time when we talked about these big O things that factorials always beat exponential functions in the long run when the n becomes sufficiently large. So now we could start. Now we don't have to bother about P1 because this was only interesting for n greater than equal to 7. So I start here first step with P7. Is 3 to the power 7 greater than seven factorial? And if you don't have any pocket calculator around, as you will not have on the exam, we have to do some estimates here, and I want to play it around a little bit with this. I express 7 as 2 times 3 plus 1, 6 as 2 times 3. And then I replace 5 and 4 with 3 and hope it will work. So I have got something smaller there than 7 factorial. This something smaller turns out to be 8 times 3 to the power of 5 plus 4 times 3 to the power of 4. And I pull out something there. This is 3 to the power of 4 times 28. And 3 cubed is 27. So this is greater than 3 to the power of 4 times 3 cubed equal to 37. Oh, you can maybe do it in your own way. I did it in this way. Okay, now is the time for this conditional statement. Assume now that 3 to the power of k is smaller than k factorial. And then we take a look at 3k plus 1. 3 to the power of k plus 1. And that is 3 times 3 to the power of k. And here comes the IA that stands for induction argument. Could you have written IS also, induction step. Because 3 to the power of k is smaller than k factorial. We are allowed to assume that. So now I've done this. So there I'm standing with 3 times k factorial. What do I want? What do you hope for? Do you think you can finish this proof now? Think what you want. Good luck. Something that's written in the book. Is this obvious, this method? Is it always true? Can we trust this induction? Well, in all mathematical theory, you have to take something for granted. And there are axioms for the real numbers and the integers. And I think these are, you find them in an appendix in the book. And an axiom for the set of positive integers. is the well ordering property. Every non-empty subset of positive integers has a least element. Every non-empty subset of positive integers has a least element. If you collect a collection of people, a finite number of people, they have all different ages, you can say that here must be someone that is the youngest one. There is the 9-year-old, and this is the youngest. Say, for the real numbers, it's completely different. A subset, for instance, the subset of the real numbers greater than 0, smaller than 1, there's no least element. If I come up with 1, you can always find a smaller one. But the positive integers has this nice well-ordering property. And that is often taken as an axiom. Using this axiom, we can prove the validity of mathematical induction. I think you find it in the book. The argument goes like this. Assume this Pn is false for some particular value, say m. Say it's false for some of these n. Then this subset of the integers must have a least element. Let's call it m. And it cannot be 1 since P1 is true. And we run into a contradiction because Pm minus 1 is true. And from this principle, if we have shown then Pm must be true also. So, that's the way they are. It's presented in the book. They are equivalent, these things. So you can prove the well-ordering principle if you assume from the start induction. But I like to think about it in this order. Well-ordering principle gives us induction. This proof method works. There is a beautiful example in the book. Don't miss the example with L-shaped figures. I have some comment down there on page 3. A nice example of what you can do with mathematical induction. You have a collection of L-shaped figures, and you should tile a checkerboard, and the sides are all powers of 2, and the important thing is that 1 square is excluded from the checkerboard, and the L-shaped figures, they are consisting of 3 squares from the same size as in the checkerboard. And if we take m equal to 1 there, then the checkerboard is 2 times 2. We should take away any of these squares. I've taken the upper left there. Is it possible to tile now the rest with this one? With tile, we mean a complete cover, no overlap, no holes, like a mosaic covering this board. And it's easy to see, we just have to rotate this a little bit, this L-shaped, and put it in there, and then it will tile this board. 1 square taken away. Then you could go on with 4 times 4 and 8 times 8. And try to do an induction proof on this. Try yourself. It's a very nice problem. I turn page and then we go over to something that is called strung induction. It's a more flexible proof technique, and this time the conditional step is that we have to use all the previous statements to prove that PK plus 1 is true. We have to assume that all of the previous ones are true, and this follows also from the well ordering principle. And I give you 2 examples here why we need this also. Take this famous one, first example. All integers greater or equal to 2 can be written as a product of primes. Otherwise, they are primes themselves. Take 15, that's 3 times 5, 2 primes. 16 is 2 to the power of 4. Then you use this prime number 2. 17 is a prime. What about 18? That's 2 times 3 squared. Then we use, it's built up by 1 digit 2 and 2 threes. So P2 is 2, true. P3 is true. 3 is equal to 3. P4 is true, since 4 is equal to 2 times 2, and so on. Assume now that all PJs running up from 2 up to K is true. Is then PK plus 1 true? 2 things can happen with k plus 1. It can be a prime. Then we are done. And we can stop. That can happen. There are infinitely many primes. So this, that could be a prime. But it could also be a composite number. That means that k plus 1 can be written as a product then of 2 smaller integers a and b. But, and now you see why we need this stronger induction, because we have to assume that now that these can be written as a product of primes. That was in the assumption. Both of them, A and B, can be written as product of primes. Okay, then we are done, because then also K plus 1 can be written as a product of primes. Nice way of proving it. I take that's also from the book and an example with polygons. Polygon, then you put out a number of vertices, hörn in Swedish, and you join these vertices with edges, straight edges, segments, and then you get a polygon. It can be a triangle, a square, a rhomb, a parallelogram. It can be regular or irregular. If it's simple, that is important here, then we have no loops. The sides cross each other, near line sides cross each other at the vertices. no other crossings. And the theory we could prove then by strong induction is that a simple polygon with n sides, n greater or equal to 3, can be triangulated into n minus 2 triangles. What does it mean? Well, if we start with n equal to 3, then we have a triangle. The polygon is a triangle, and it's no problem. It's already triangulated, and we got one triangle. If we have four vertices, we take a diagonal. That means an edge that a segment that joins non-consecutive vertices. Vertices with no edge in common. And draw such a diagonal that then we get two triangles. Here I have an example in the figure here. I have take n equal to 5 and the dashed lines there are what's called an interior diagonal. Let's take the interior diagonal to the left there first. Forget about the other one. With this segment, I divide the polygon into a triangle, left part, and a polygon with four sides to the right. And then you see maybe now the argument how it's running, because I have it's already triangulated to the left, and I can assume by this strong induction that it's possible to triangulate the right part. And in fact I do it with new diagonal there, the dashed one. And the crucial thing here is this lemma to prove this. This looks so innocent. Every simple polygon has an interior diagonal. Isn't that obvious? Do we have to prove such a things? Well, we have to be careful. That's the job. That's what mathematicians get their salary for, to work out such things. And it turned out to be very hard to prove such a simple thing. But when this is done, then you can use this strong induction, because then you can take a huge polygon. And if you find such an interior diagonal, and then you have two sub-polygons, and then you know that it works out this triangulation for them, and then you are done. Very much the same as for the prime numbers. It was composite with two smaller units, and you have already proven it for them. Okay, I finish with something from 4.3, recursive definitions, and we do it only for functions. There's a rather long section about recursive definitions for sets, and I don't think we need that. That takes us too far. There are some connections there are some connections here with induction. If you go over to sets, but I skip that. I'm only interested in here in recursive definitions of functions. Take the Fibonacci numbers, famous numbers. F, you start with 0 and 1, F0 is 0, F1 is 1, and next number is the sum of the two previous ones. Well, this gives rise to a function. And we are interested, for instance, if the F100, we could written F as a function of 100, but this is, I guess you are used to this notation with a subscript 100 there instead. And we'll come back to this in chapter 7, how to get a formula for this F100. Can we get the formula? Or do we have to start from the beginning and use a computer program and just see what happens? I do it backwards here, and I try to convince you that this F100 must be a number times F2 plus a number times F1. Integers there, but there we have an example of a recursive definition. We can go the other way around. In this next example from the book, we have a n equal to n squared, the square numbers, and so there we have the formula, so to speak. Can we find the recursive definition of these number square numbers? Yeah, we can do a little figure. We think of a square, we count the number of unit cells in this n times n square. I have in the figure there, and we have the smaller white square, this is n minus 1 squared, and to get next square we have to add these two corridors there. They are both of length n, so it's 2n, but don't forget the double counting up on the upper right cell there, so I have to subtract with 1. So our recursive relation for this square numbers is that an is equal to the previous one plus 2n minus 1. And we get out, of course, the squares in this way. So we can define functions in this way also, like recursive definition. Oh, I finish the lecture with another example from the book. It's about 5 Fibonacci numbers. And if we square and sum the first n ones, then this formula tells us here that this should be equal to fn times next Fibonacci number. And I have listed the first into 5 Fibonacci numbers there, and I give an example that it works out for up to 3. Left hand side becomes 6, and the right hand side becomes 2 times 3. That's 6. I think it's, you remember now, you have the definition of the Fibonacci numbers on top of this page. I think it's a very good if you can do a induction proof, a normal induction proof that we for this formula, induction step and all this, and what do we hope for, and so on. I have another proof here. I go the other way. I use the definition, but I work from right to left. I express f n plus 1. I'm using the definition of this, and then I get fn squared, and then I work on and I get fn minus 1 squared. I repeat this all the time, and all these squares comes out. But try it with the induction in the normal way. Okay, bye.